We greet you in Jesus' name this evening. Relationships, fruit, or pursuit? The title raises the question whether relationships in our lives are to be fruits or pursuits. A pursuit is a chase, a goal, something we strive toward or try to follow. Since fruit is contrasted to pursuit, I take it that a fruit is not a goal we seek directly, but possibly a benefit that comes in pursuing something else or something like that. I'm not sure exactly how to take it. As I understood it, the title could suggest several things: that pursuing relationships must be kept in balance, so that it's possible to overemphasize relationships. And I think that is true. And we'll think about that maybe a bit. But I would like to start with the importance of relationships, because I think they're very important. The importance of relationships, number one, is seen in the nature of God and in His creation. The very nature of God teaches us something about the importance of relationships. Did you ever meditate on the words, "God is love," which occur twice in 1 John chapter 4? God is love, God is love. Why doesn't it say, "God is power," or "God is knowledge," or "God is holiness"? I believe that love expresses something about the essential nature of God that the other attributes do not. Maybe I'm wrong. It seems to me, though. Our God exists in three persons in loving relationship, and I think that's significant. And if you like a $60 term, the paradigm or archetype or original pattern of ideal existence is not the individual person, independent and autonomous, but the triune God who exists in three persons. I think that's significant. This tri-personal God, whose nature is love, created the world, including men, as an expression of His love and a further outlet for it. And when He created the first man, the first human, He said in Genesis 2:18, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an help meet for him." And Psalm 68:6 tells us that God sets the solitary in families. No man is an island. We were created as social beings. We need other people. The oldest institution in human history is a social institution, the home. Solitary confinement is an extremely unpleasant form of punishment, generally used only for the very worst criminals or for short periods of punishment in regular prisons. So, the importance of relationships is seen in the nature of God and in His creation. It's secondly seen in the two greatest commandments. A scribe came to Jesus one day to ask what is the very most important thing in all of God's great law. And Jesus answered him, "The first of all the commandments is, 'Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, and with all thy strength.' This is the first commandment. And the second is like, namely this: thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." Number one in importance is a proper relationship with God. Number two in importance, a proper relationship with our fellow humans. These are the divinely prescribed priorities. God does not lay before us an agenda of accomplishments, things like businesses built up and well managed, healthy bottom lines, congregations established, books written, efficient management of house cleaning, sewing, gardens, daily schedules, etc. Instead, He says, number one, your relationship with me. Number two, your relationship with other people. These are the most important things to attend to. Does not mean that the other things are insignificant, but they must serve these God-commanded relationships and not compete with them, not destroy them, but serve them. Oftentimes, personal goals challenge relationships for supremacy. And I would say this is something I have struggled with. There are all kinds of self-improvement goals and plans. It might be intellectual goals of knowing, or financial goals of possessing, or recreational goals of enjoying, or even body goals of living long or achieving certain levels of accomplishment or whatever it might be. But when personal agendas take priority, then relationships suffer. Others are brushed off. I need to get on with my self-improvement program so I can feel good about myself, so I can feel self-fulfilled. But the truth is, we are not here on planet Earth for the selfish motive of improving ourselves so we can be the kind of person that we and others can respect. We are here to move out of ourselves, to form relationships with others. And if that takes time away from more personal goals, why, so be it. The importance of relationships is seen, number three, in the teaching of Jesus. Jesus underscored the importance of relationships in the story of the Good Samaritan. And I'm relying on your knowledge of the scriptures this evening. You know the story of the Good Samaritan. Jesus was traveling the Jericho Road. No, a Jew was traveling the Jericho Road and was mugged by thieves and left half dead. And a Jewish priest comes down the road, sees the victim at a distance, crosses the road to get away from him, and goes on his way. And then the Levite comes down and he pauses and looks on this man, considers, and then crosses the road to the other side and goes on his way. Then a Samaritan comes down the road, sees the man, comes up to him, has compassion on him, performs first aid, takes him to a place where he'll be cared for, and gives the proprietor a blank signed check to pay for his care. It's amazing. So much the more so because of the mutual animosity between Jews and Samaritans. The only true parallel I can think of in our society would be the feelings between blacks and whites in the American South prior to the Civil Rights Movement. And I don't think that's strong enough either. I think of how James and John went into a Samaritan town to find lodging one time, and they wouldn't have them. This was a two-sided thing. It wasn't one-sided. And they wouldn't have them. They said, "You're Jews, you're on your way to Jerusalem, well, you just get out of here." And so James and John came back to Jesus and they said, what shall we do? Shall we call fire down from heaven on them?" And Jesus said, "Well, you really don't know what spirit you are of." And he didn't, but they didn't. But this was the kind of feeling that existed between Samaritans and Jews. Well, in this story, Jesus was giving us some powerful points about what it means to love our fellow men. And he strips away from us some of the excuses we may offer for keeping our distance from them, for not establishing relationships with them. There's a social stigma, for instance. Our kind of people don't have anything to do with this kind of people. That's no excuse, Jesus says. Love rises above social prejudices. The ethnic differences. The Samaritans were a mongrel race produced by the intermingling of pagan Gentiles from Mesopotamia and poor Jews hundreds of years earlier. So they were different ethnically. And Jesus says, that's no excuse. And then religious differences. The Samaritan religion was an unsavory mix of Judaism and paganism. And Jesus says, that's no excuse. Do good to all men, especially to those of the household of faith, but to all men. And then there's the danger excuse. Is this fellow bait? Are those bandits lurking nearby? And Jesus says, that's no excuse. And then there's the busy schedule. Probably this priest and Levite were due at some religious function perhaps. And Jesus says, that's no excuse. He strips away one by one the excuses that we offer for keeping our distance, for crossing the road to get around people. The villains in Jesus' story crossed the road to avoid neighboring their fellow men. And it's clear that Jesus wants his followers crossing the road to help them, crossing the road the other direction. Could we say that there are three types of people in the world? Those who see the people they meet as obstacles to get around, a bother. You cross the road to avoid them. That's the viewpoint of the priest. That's the viewpoint of the Levite. And then there are those who see people as those to get something from. And it might be profits. It might be admiration. It might be fleshly gratification. But they see people as a thing to use. And this is the viewpoint of the predator, the thief, the sociopath. Those who see people as, and then the third viewpoint is those who see people as persons to give something to aid, to build up, to encourage. This was the viewpoint of the Samaritan. This is the viewpoint of Jesus, who came to this earth to give his life for the salvation of the human race. This is the Christian way and the Christian attitude. And what kind of persons are we tonight? Maybe we have some elements of each of them. I'm not sure. But clearly Jesus was emphasizing the importance of relationships in this powerful story. Somebody said this, and I'm stewing over it. I'm not sure if I agree with it 100%. God does not demand of me that I accomplish great things. He does demand of me that I strive for excellence in my relationships. I think the second statement is true. I'm not sure if he doesn't ask us to accomplish anything. I don't know, but the priority is the relationships, and I suppose that's correct. So let's come back to this question of whether relationships are to be pursued. That quote certainly sounds like they are. Jesus certainly emphasized right relationships with people, and yet to say that our lives are to be organized around the continual pursuit of relationships doesn't seem quite right either. That Good Samaritan hardly left home that morning to pursue a relationship with a beat-up Jew along the road. Yet when he came upon one, he made that man his priority, until he had done what he could to alleviate his suffering. I think that Samaritan must have looked at that Jew as a man God had put in his way for him to help. And I think God does that kind of thing. I think he does. And so, while he didn't go forth to pursue that relationship, when he saw that man and saw that it was his opportunity and his duty to help this man, why, it became priority number one under a sub-priority of thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy strength. I think so. And then he went on his way again, perhaps to do business, perhaps to visit his family. I'm not sure what he was doing. Three observations, and then we're going to give some of the some thoughts on balance and overemphasis. We cannot possibly pursue relationships with everybody around us. I mean, we live in a shrinking world. I read somewhere years ago that the jet airplane alone shrank the world 40%. But we live in a shrinking world. It's much smaller since then. We know hundreds of persons, some maybe thousands. I think about it in our district, there's 700 members and, I don't know, something over well over 1,000 people who attend, and I don't know all their names. I'm sorry, I should. The children, at least. Imagine, I often feel like I'm a mile wide and an inch deep in my relationships, and that doesn't feel right, and yet you can't possibly be 10 feet deep with everybody. I mean, it just can't be that way. We're human. Imagine listing all your family and friends and acquaintances on a huge sheet of paper with yourself in the center, and then drawing lines connecting yourself to each one, representing your relationship, And next, draw lines representing the relationships among your acquaintances, and many of them will surely know each other. And what a complex, interconnected network of relationships surrounds each of us. And that's the way it is. That's the way it is. And they're important, but they're not all, secondly, they're not all equally important. So number two, we must give priority to the most important relationships because they compete with each other for our time. And taking time with one person on planet Earth means not taking time with 7 billion others. How do you like that? It's the way it is, isn't it? Yeah. Obviously, not all relationships have the same priority. We have more responsibility for some than for others. Some need to be pursued, some maintained, and some taken as opportunities when we come to them, like the Good Samaritan did. We could form a hierarchy of relationship priorities. And I guess if we do that, we'd say for sure God's at the top. And then maybe family and brotherhood, and those are somewhat equal. Friends, workplace, neighbors, people we meet up with in our journey. But surely God's on top. And surely a top priority must be to pursue a relationship with God. God certainly pursued a relationship with us. He walked and talked with our first parents in the garden in the cool of the day. Maybe, I'm not sure if that would be morning or evening or both. I did think maybe that tells us when to walk and talk with God, when to talk with God in the cool of the day. See, most people have it in the devotions in the morning or the evening. Morning seems like a good time. And when the human race was estranged from God by sin, he pursued a relationship with us by the extreme measure of becoming one of us and dying to restore a relationship with him. And he urges us now to, repeatedly urges us to seek his face. Obviously, this is top priority. And then, of course, there's family, which is utmost importance. Our children have only one father and one mother. Our spouse has only one life companion. And these relationships require top attention. Rifts must be healed, communication maintained, life principles taught by precept, example, and discipline. And with good family relationships, things work well, and without, the hard job can hardly be accomplished. Then brotherhood. You scan the epistles, seeing how much emphasis is given to relationships. And it's just a good exercise to do. Sometimes people seem to think that they can be in Christ alone. They ought to read their Bibles. take Ephesians, for instance. I'm just going to read a couple verses from Ephesians 4 that sound like relationships. Verse 3 says, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. That sounds like a pursuit, like you're putting effort into it. What about verses 11 to 13? He gave some apostles, prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers, for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God unto a perfect man. Certainly there's a lot of relationships in there. And verse 16, from whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplieth. Again, relationships. 31 and 32, very practical. Let all bitterness, wrath, and anger be put away, and so forth. Hebrews, there's several verses that would tell us things, say things that sound like we are to pursue relationships, follow peace with all men, and follow the things which make for peace. And follow is a synonym for pursue. So you could say pursue peace with all men and pursue things which make for peace with all men. Brotherhood is a priority too, and some pursuing needs to be done there. And of course, then there's friends and workplace and neighbors and casual acquaintances and all this. And all these have their place in our lives, but they're not top priority. And number three then, people must take priority over personal enrichment goals and enjoyment. I was talking about that before, but just to emphasize again that people are what count. We're not here for animals and crops and knowledge and money and possessions and recreation. All these are a means to an end. And the end is to serve God by serving our fellow man, to help others on their way through life, to alleviate suffering, to encourage and lift, and above all, to help them understand the love and goodness of God so they may form a relationship with Him. And we do that by giving our testimony and handing out tracts and that sort of thing. But those actions are most effective when they flow from a relationship that demonstrates the love and goodness of God. That's the way it works the best. This is a school meeting. In school, people are what count. It's not the excitement of knowledge, of books, music, history. It's not getting the children to make a really nice sound that is the top thing. It's not making a nice scrapbook of pictures to put in with your keepsakes. That's the top thing. It's not what? Developing a computer grading system. You know, teachers can go off in these side alleys a bit, and those things aren't wrong, but that's not what it's about. We want our teachers to be excited about knowing, but I've seen some teachers who seemingly enjoyed teaching mostly because they enjoyed science or music or math. One teacher reportedly said he really liked the job except for the children. But the children are the job. That's the point. People are our job. And that's true not just for school teachers. That's true for everybody. People are our job. That's what it's about. Now, ways relationships can become unbalanced or be overemphasized. I would like to give several thoughts on this yet. Remember, and number one is when lower priority relationships cause us to neglect higher ones. Remember again, relationships compete for time. You can be so busy with people, we have no time for God. Our Christian supplement in our discipline says that worship is to be considered of more importance than service. Worship is to be considered of more importance than service. To be so busy with people, even helping people, that we have no time for God, that's not right. That's an unbalance. Imbalance. To be so busy with children that you have no time for your spouse, that's an imbalance. The best thing a mother can do for her children is to love their father, they say, and vice versa. The best thing a father can do for the children is love their mother. When children grow up and leave home, we don't want to be two strangers dwelling in the same house. To be so busy helping the needy, you have no time for your family duties and relationships. To be so busy with church work, you have no time for family. Well, thought needs to be given to that too, and it can be very difficult to balance all this out. But it reminds me of the story of a seminar. And I've given this different times, and maybe you heard it. I got it when I was working for Rod and Staff. It came one time from somebody there. But the story was that there was a seminar, and the seminar leader was there, and he had a bucket and some stuff, and the students were watching him, and he took his bucket, and he took fist-sized rocks, pretty good size, and started putting them in the bucket until the bucket was full, and then he asked his students, "Is the bucket full?" And they said, "Yeah, the bucket's full," and he said, "Are you sure?" And then he took another container, it had dry pea gravel in it, and he started filtering the pea gravel into this thing, and it went down in between the rocks, and after a while, the thing was level full of pea gravel, and he said, "Is it full now?" And they said, "Ah, yeah, it's full now." And then he took a bag of dry sand, like you use for sandblasting or something, flows very well, and he filtered that, and the tiny grains went down through the pea gravel until finally, once again, the bucket was full. And he said, "Well, now is it full?" And they weren't sure what to say by now. And while they waited, the teacher took a pitcher and started pouring water into the bucket. And finally, it was full of water. And he said, "Now, what is the lesson we learn from this?" And somebody said, "There's always room for a little more." And he said, "No. The lesson is, if you want to put the big things into your life, you had to put them in first. And that's how it is. You fill that bucket with water first, you're not going to get one rock in it. You're not going to get a pebble in it. If you want to get those rocks in, you have to put them in first. You have to put the things in the right order. You have to put them in the right order. Well, let's say the rocks represent God, who is the biggest priority in our lives. The pea gravel, family and church, the second priority. The sand represents the lesser relationships, and the water, guess what? That's us. The water represents yourself. And the order in which we fill that bucket and our lives is very important. If a person starts off filling his life with all the stuff he enjoys, all the books he'd like to read, and all the hunting and fishing and whatever rings his bell, he fills his life up with that first, why, he won't have time for anything or anybody. He's doing it wrong. If you fill your life with sand first, let's say needy souls first, you won't have time for church, you won't have time for your family, and you won't have time for God either. But if you prioritize properly, God first, then family and church, then needy people and neighbors and acquaintances, there will even be a little room for yourself in the nooks and crannies of life. But you have to do it all in the right order. And that's how it must be. Relationships will be out of balance, number two, when there are no boundaries in our lives. The truth is that some relationships are very demanding. Some high-maintenance persons never think they get enough attention. And you can hardly handle very many high-maintenance individuals. So there must be boundaries. We're not infinite beings. We have to learn to say no. You don't say no to gratify your lusts or indulge your laziness, but to conserve your strength for future service. If we do not take enough time to care for ourselves in public, in personal worship, in rest, in solitude, even in godly recreation, we will not be able to care for others. And Jesus taught that too. There was a time that Jesus, it says they didn't have time to eat. It's in Mark 7. You're probably familiar with it. But they didn't have time to eat almost. They were so busy healing people and teaching and so forth. And so Jesus told his disciples, now, look, it's time to get some rest. If I can find it here. It's time to get some rest. And he said unto them, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. Mark 6:31. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. This is across the Sea of Galilee. But the Sea of Galilee is only about 8 miles by 12. And so a boat isn't very far off the shore. And you can see it. And the people saw them departing. And many knew him. They said, that's Jesus going. And ran afoot thither out of all cities, and out went them, and came together unto them. So he gets to the other side, and there's the crowd waiting for him. They beat him there. And so what did he do? Did he say, listen, we had enough. We came over. No, he said, well, what does it say he did? Well, it says, and Jesus, when he came out, saw much people and was moved with compassion toward them because they were as sheep, not having a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. Until finally, it was time. See, they ended up feeding the 5,000 that time, I believe. Yeah, just to add a little bit more to their agenda. And then finally, he sent the people away to go to bed. And he sent his disciples away to row back across the sea to give them that recreation, I guess. And he went up into the mountain to pray. And of course, that was the night he came and walked to him on the water when the wind was disadvantageous and so forth. And so, did he take time? Yes, he did. Yes, he did. But he certainly didn't indulge himself. He certainly didn't do that. Relationships are overemphasized when we count on relationships to do what they cannot do. And that is, sometimes I think people get unbalanced in this matter of relationships when they say, well, I'm going to have good relationships, and then I'm going to be Mr. Nice or Mrs. Nice, and then everybody's going to like me, and everybody will do what I want them to do and what they ought to do. I will be Papa and Mama Nice to my children, and they will curb their baser natures on their own, and that's counting on relationships to do the disciplining that God holds parents responsible for. And that's an imbalance. And then we can be Mr. Nice to ungodly neighbors, and say, well, then there will be no word to ever speak a word of rebuke or testimony. They will surely embrace my faith if I'm nice enough that they really like me, or at least they'll like me back, which they will hardly do if I rebuke and confront their sin. That's counting on relationships to do the difficult witnessing and even rebuking. Be preacher nice, and you won't have to address deviations from church standards. An unstable youth will like you so well that they will eventually adopt your convictions because they're attracted by the pleasantness of your personality. That's counting on relationships to provide the leadership that God will hold us accountable for. You can be brother or sister nice in the classroom, and then your parents, your pupils will learn well and behave well and like their teacher to boot. And that's counting on relationships to do the hard work of teaching and managing and correcting and exercising authority that the school board is paying you to do. Now, keeping good relationships are helpful in all those things that I said. They're helpful at home, they're helpful at witnessing, they're helpful in leadership, they're helpful in schoolrooms. People hear us better when relationships are good, they respond better. Good relationships enhance our influence. And I'm not advocating that we try to become brother or sister grouch. For some of us, it doesn't require much striving. But it is clear from the scriptures that the unpleasant duties of rebuke and discipline are necessary to confront fallen wills in a fallen world. It just is that way. And we should not count on relationships to somehow make that unnecessary. That is overemphasizing relationships. Read your Bible with an open mind. Read 2 Corinthians and decide if it sounds like Paul is Brother Nice. Or who was Mr. Nice in 1 Kings 22? Certainly not Micaiah. But Micaiah was the Lord's man, and all those 400 people-pleasing yes men were the devil's men. That's how it was. Sometimes the most loving thing we can do for another person is to tell them the truth about life and their own condition. And that's what Micaiah did. Wasn't what Ahab wanted to hear. Wasn't what the 400 wanted to hear. But he spoke the truth in love to those deceivers. Ahab reacted. Ahab wanted something smoother than Micah's rough truth. Reminds me of Isaiah 30:10, prophesy not unto us right things, speak unto us smooth things. And people would like something smooth, but truth often isn't smooth. Truth sometimes hurts, so does a surgeon's knife, but they both save lives. Ultimately, it's not our job to make people happy. When we make this our aim, we will fail to do the difficult duties of discipline that God has assigned us to do. Keeping people as happy is God's job. And we can learn a lot by observing how God and God the Son handled relationships while on earth, and how our Heavenly Father deals with people today with infinite love and tender mercy, but often also with pain. Relationships are overemphasized or misused when we have selfish motives. And maybe thinking of the classroom, the desire to be liked is common to all people to one extent or another. Plenty of persons pursue relationships because they're needy. They want affection, they want attention, and we should like our pupils, but we should not need them. We should like them, but not need them. And to make it practical in a school setting, I'm going to give you three teacher portraits. Portrait number one. You have the teacher who desires so strongly to be loved that he will refuse to take issue with wrong and exercises God-given authority for right. His goal is to please the children, keep everybody happy, have everybody like him. To reach these goals, he acts like the student's buddy, caves in under the pressure of pouts and frowns, hands out bribes, treats to bribe them. His feelings about himself rise and fall with his students' feelings about him, and he's setting up himself for a bruising. Seeking mostly to be loved, he usually finds disrespect and dislike from his pupils eventually. Portrait number two. Here's the teacher who is so fearful of the children that he fears to relinquish any control. He's so impressed with his authority that he wears it on his sleeve self-consciously and constantly makes his students aware of it as well. His fear of the children causes him to be constantly suspicious, paranoid, always expecting misbehavior, and interpreting all misbehavior as against himself personally. Not knowing how to keep children in line except by fear, he becomes all teeth and prickles, a sort of cross between a porcupine and a crocodile. Seeking mostly to be respected, he finds fear and secret disrespect from his pupils. Well, that's not much good either. Portrait number three, we'll make this the good one. This teacher has made his peace with God and with himself. As a result, he's usually at peace with others also. He knows his limitations, does not demand perfection of himself or of others, and is therefore relatively easy to live with. With the children, he is not overly suspicious or easily threatened. He does not take student anger and misbehavior personally, for he knows that children have a life outside of school and carry many of their frustrations to school with them. The mature teacher does not expect to be constantly liked for everything he does. He knows people don't like authority generally. They despise government. That's human nature. So he doesn't expect to be constantly liked for everything he does, but he realizes that children need more regimentation than they want, and he is willing to wait for their appreciation. With this in mind, he carries out discipline as necessary according to the wisdom God gives him, yet in it all continues to respect and love his children. Seeking mostly to do his duty and please his Lord, he finds the fruit of a good relationship with his pupils. See, there's the fruit. This wasn't what he was aiming for, exactly. And then last, relationships can be unbalanced. On this matter, people and principle. Sometimes we talk about, there are people who, what counts with them is the principle. And there are people that what counts with them is just other people. They see people, and others see principle. It's just the way it is. We have different personalities, I think. I would call the people who see see mostly principle being true blue. We'll call them blue. They are true blue to the principle. And the people who see mostly people, they're going to be a little yellow because they wouldn't want to make anybody unhappy. So we'll call them yellow. So which does God want us to be? Does he want us to be true blue to principle, or does he want us to be yellow, really thinking about people all the time? He wants us, brethren and sisters, to be green. He wants us to be green. He wants us to consider principle. He wants us to consider people. And some of us will probably be blue-green. And some of us will probably be yellow-green. But to be in between there, I think that's the place of balance. Lord bless you as you work with your relationships.